On this episode of Team Building Saves the World.
You know, if you ask any of the djembe masters, why does the djembe exist? They'll tell you that the djembe was put on earth to bring people together. That business and the workplace was becoming ever more transactional and less human. I think what young people are looking for today is for business to be used as a force of good.
Yes.
Lovely. Two completely different cultures, two completely different ways of doing something, and you bring those two together and it's just like, that's where the magic is.
Team, it's me, your old friend Rich Rinnensland, host of Team Building Saves the World. Welcome to season 5 of the show, where I speak to thought leaders from around the world discussing variable strategies and tools to help you and your team build a better work environment. And today we are exploring new ways of organizational culture and leadership with our guest, performer and Oprah-endorsed TED Global speaker, Doug Manuel. But first, I have to share some love with my supporters at Team Bonding. Your team is ready to experience teamwork through the power of play, then visit teambonding.com to learn more. Now, team, please join me in welcoming my guest, former BBC and now Netflix documentary producer and creator of the Jeff Award-nominated stage show, Do You Speak Djembe, Doug Manuel. Doug! How are you today, my friend? Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm doing great. I almost wanted to grab one of those drums that you can see behind me there to accompany that intro music.
Yeah, I love it. I love it very much. I do want to get into it, especially explaining to my people out there, my team, what a djembe is. But first, let's find out a little bit more about you. I always start out the show pretty much the same way. Just tell everybody out there about yourself and how you got into the world of shaping corporate culture and leadership.
Well, I basically was a BBC documentary producer for 8 years, from the age of, well, I got into TV when I was about 18 and then just kind of worked my way up the ladder. Started off as a runner on a film set and then ended up working in documentaries as a runner and then production coordinator and an associate producer. And then the last 2 years that I worked at the BBC, I was working on a documentary about African elephants, which was extraordinary because I got to travel all over the continent, the mother continent, and film these majestic, incredible animals. And it was all about how the animals adapted according to where they were in Africa, and basically according to their environment.
Right.
And in parallel, and at that time, I was invited to go on a djembe workshop. The djembe is the kind of hourglass-shaped African, West African drum. And that day, I fell in love. I fell in love with a drum. And at the end of making that film on elephants at the BBC, my boss said to me, okay, now we'd like you to work on a film on gorillas. Mm. And when I sat down and I did the budget and the schedule, I realized I was going to get about between 7 and 12 weeks travel in 3 years.
Wow.
And I said, I can't stay here, and I love you, and I love the BBC, and I love particularly, I would say, wildlife filmmaking, but I really have to follow my heart. So I packed my job in, and I took myself off to West Africa, and basically found myself varying different teachers, and I played the djembe for 5-6 hours every single day until I couldn't move my fingers. And it became an obsession, and it became an absolute passion. And somehow something woke up inside me. I'd had a challenging childhood. I'd seen my dad have a heart attack when I was 6. I was sent off to boarding school when I was 8. My mom died when I was 21. So I was pretty lost, even though I had, you know, a successful career in TV and film. I never really found myself. And when I started playing djembe, as I say, something inside me woke up. And I thought to myself, everybody in the world needs to play djembe. So that's basically my story. But you know, if you ask any of the djembe masters, why does the djembe exist?
Yeah.
They'll tell you that the djembe was put on earth to bring people together. And the actual word djembe comes from the Malinke tribe of West Africa. And back in the day, and then I guess they still say it today, they used to say Anchor J, Anchor Bay, Anchor J, Anchor Bay, which means everybody's gathered together. And Anchor J, Anchor Bay, so it was djembe. And that's where the word djembe actually comes from.
Ah.
So the drum does its job. The rhythms certainly bring people together. And I think actually one of the things that really struck me when I was in Africa on this first trip was that over and above studying the music, I was studying people and I was studying community and I was studying collaboration.
Okay.
And I think that that's where the whole, I come from a belief, or I hold a strong belief, that politicians don't rule the world, companies do. And if we can bring people together in organizations and have people work together, not just in organizations, but between organizations, then I think we can make a positive difference and have a positive impact in the world. Mm. So that's really where I put my sights on the corporate sector, to do what I could to really bring people together.
How is it you come about doing that? I mean, what did the djembe teach you that you now teach to others to bring them together?
When I first got back from West Africa from this initial 6-month study trip, mm-hmm. I came back with 15 drums, and I started running workshops in schools and prisons and refugee centers in the UK, in London. And I have to say that working with these, well, in high security prisons and with kids, they were my best teachers.
Okay.
In terms of how to facilitate. And I think it was by working with them that I began to build a toolbox of facilitation skills of how to, you know, use the drum and use the rhythm going further. And I, you know, I'll admit, for 3 years, I drove around with 15 drums in the boot of my car.
Sure.
And I struggled to make any money. And at the time, there was an organization in the UK that was called Arts and Business. And what they did was they trained up artists to show them how that art form could be used for companies. Mm. So if you, what they had us do was break down every single skill set that we were using, me as a drummer, and how could that relate to the business world? And so as an example, you can't think rhythm, right? Rhythm has to be felt.
Right.
So that opens the door to a whole piece around emotional intelligence.
Okay.
We know we trust somebody because we feel it. We don't think trust. It's a feeling that we have.
Gotcha.
And so if we talk about flow, and if we talk about working in rhythm, either with ourselves or with each other, that really demands that we come back to the felt perception part of who we are, that feeling part of who we are. And really today, that's the only thing that separates us from AI.
Yeah. I was watching one of your TED Talks in preparation of meeting you for the show. And you do talk about something that I saw that was really spectacular. You talk about how with AI and the fact that we're working a lot more from home than we ever had before, meaning we're not together face to face and side by side. So we're missing something. We're starting to lose that coming together feeling. So what is it you think we're actually missing? And how does your work with the djembe and this philosophy of bringing people back together work?
I think what we're missing today, I mean, interestingly, during the pandemic, I reached out to all of my clients that I've been working with for 20 odd years and sent them a survey. And what became very, very clear was that business and the workplace was becoming ever more transactional and less human.
How so, though?
And so,
I mean, what is it that they were seeing and that you were seeing?
Well, it's just that, really, okay. that everything was becoming very transactional. People were, you know, getting on a Zoom call, and it was less about relationship and it was much more about the business that needed to be done.
Okay.
So I believe that you know, if we're going to come back to being human, yes, there are those kind of coffee machine moments that happen by default when we're in the office.
Right.
But actually we have to come back to that feeling part of ourselves. That's where empathy comes from.
Okay.
I mean, really, to understand somebody else's perspective, it's one thing to understand it, but empathy then goes to another level if we think to ourselves, what does it actually feel like to be in that person's shoes? That's true empathy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you think then again about drumming and rhythm, it's about coming back to that felt part of ourselves. And it's really essential today. It's just really essential. Mm. I mean, all the jobs that I think many, many kids are studying for today in our universities, really around the world, within 3 to 5 years, they're all going to be done by AI.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, so really all we have left is that human connection, and how do we collaborate and how do we work together? And I think during the pandemic, one of the things that happened was that, you know, we became ever more separated. And it's not like we don't know how to be in community, but we need to relearn how to be in community. And why not relearn from the specialists, which is, you know, rural Africa, Mother Africa, the mother continent, which scientifically, if you go far enough back, we all come from Africa. I mean, that's the cradle of humanity.
Right.
And so why don't we learn from the specialists who are still living in community? And community is their very, very way of life. Collaboration is their very way of life. And so if we can relearn what we've forgotten by going back to studying how it was done and how it's still done, then I think that we're on a path where productivity can once again soar.
So let's get into some nitty-gritty of it, because for the entire time that I have been doing this podcast, everybody has come on and talked about the need of empathy, the need of looking at someone and saying, what's it like for them being where they are right now? And we would use it in our day-to-day. We use it for our coworkers. We use it from management down and from, you know, workers to management. We use it for the sales force. We use it for the clientele, whatever it happens to be. But how is it teachable? I mean, how does playing the djembe teach people to think about everybody else instead of thinking about themselves first?
I don't think it's about playing the djembe.
Okay.
I think the djembe is a tool.
Right.
So certainly when you're making music together, we have to listen to each other. Because if one person in solos, then everyone else has to accompany and provide the foundation of a rhythm.
Yeah.
So if one person is going to express themselves, then the rest of us have to provide the foundation. But I don't think it's necessarily about djembe and about the music. But I do think it's about that whole notion of coming back to feeling. And in order to play djembe, then you have to feel. And so true empathy is really understanding where the other person is at and what are they actually feeling.
Okay. Right.
So once we can do that, then what do we do with empathy? And actually all people want, whether it be clients or whether it be colleagues, they just want to be heard and they want to be understood. And I think that often what happens is that somebody will tell us what a problem is, and rather than feeling into what they might be feeling, mm-hmm. we look for the immediate solution. So someone might say, I've got too many priorities. And a manager might say, well, then instead of having 18, just have 5.
Right.
But that actually doesn't solve the problem, because right. we haven't actually really gone into feeling what the person right. is feeling.
And right? then the next question is, how do I give her 13 different things that are on my plate?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's not about always finding external strategies. Mm-hmm. It's about deep, deep, deep listening. And as human beings, we have that capacity. You can put into ChatGPT, how can I reduce stress? Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the answers might come up. It might turn around to you and say, well, reduce the amount of priorities that you're putting in place for yourself.
Right.
But actually, that doesn't address the underlying problem of true empathy, which is being felt rather than thought.
Mm.
And that's where rhythm and the djembe comes back.
Nice.
Into play.
Nice. Yeah, I have a teenage daughter who very clearly told us one day, because she had a lot that she would complain about, you know, being a teenager in the modern world, especially here in the States, she would just start texting us in the middle of the day, complaining. And then we would, being her parents, try to fix it. You know, try this, try that. Have you done this? Have you done that? She finally came out and just told us all she wants is for us to go, honey, I'm sorry you feel that way. That is terrible. I understand how that can happen to you and why you feel the way that you do. That's all she wanted. She didn't want us to solve anything. She just wanted to know she was being heard. Hmm. I want to get deeper into this, but I hope you don't mind, my friend. I need to step away for just a quick second. And I want to tell everybody out there about a company I am very proud to be a part of, Team Bonding. Team Bonding was founded over 20 years ago with one simple question. How can employees have a great time while fostering strong, authentic bonds between people who work together? No matter where your company is located, Team Bonding offers powerful, engaging, custom-building events designed to get the best out of your team anywhere in the world. They've created a catalog of innovative events using the power of play as a learning tool and tapping into the correlation of work and play. So whether it's scavenger hunts to Jeopardy or so many more, the team bonding of activities, be they live, virtual, or hybrid, maximizes the impact of team building with an accent on fun. Visit teambonding.com to schedule your event now. Team bonding, when you want seriously fun results. And we are back with Doug Manuel talking about his methods of trying to teach these coming together philosophies to corporations. Doug, let's move on here a little bit and talk about like creating that positive and inclusive culture, especially with inclusivity, because it's such an important part of the work world now. How would you go about teaching or just encouraging a company to be better about their inclusivity?
So my feeling about inclusiveness is that companies, to a certain degree, are taking, once again, an external approach. So if we talk about diversity and inclusion, mm-hmm. it's how many people do we have of any given race, color, potentially religion, disabled, right. able, whatever.
Yes.
And then it becomes about ticking the boxes. And I think within this, there's bad news and there's good news. The bad news is it all starts with us. Mm-hmm. As every single individual in the company, and how inclusive are they? Okay. And the good news is, it's all about us, meaning that we can absolutely take responsibility and do something about it.
Right.
But it takes every single person in the company to want to build an inclusive culture. Mm. And it's how we talk to people. It's how we look at people. I was reading a case study, actually, of the CEO, the first CEO of Southwest Airlines. Mm-hmm. Last week, Mr. Keller, and there's varying different cases I've talked about with him. It was from IMD, Europe's leading business school, and it was talking about how when he came out of his office, he talked to everybody in exactly the same way. He remembered everybody's names.
Okay,
and that built an incredibly positive culture because the example that he set rippled out across the whole organization.
Nice.
And then of course, you know, the profit that Southwest made and the growth that they had was exponential. I mean, it was huge. And it comes down to the behavior of every single person in the organization.
Okay.
It can't just come from the DEI department. It can't just come from the talent department, or it needs to come from everybody in the organization. So it's like, how do we actually go about including everybody and listening to everybody? And once again, you know, I refer back to rural Africa. Mm. I mean, I go back into Africa and I'm completely welcomed and I'm fed and it's open arms.
Nice.
And it doesn't matter of the color of my skin. It doesn't matter that I don't speak all the tribal languages in West Africa. On the contrary, I speak one. Mm. And I'm just included and welcomed and heard. And, you know, I laugh with them, they laugh with me. And this is what we need to do in organizations. But that's part of their culture. That's what they do. That's how they live. That's how they survive. And that's how they thrive, through inclusivity.
Yeah.
And once again, it's relearning what we've forgotten as humans.
Like what? I mean, what is it that they know or they remember culturally that we've lost? Because look around, whether you're in Europe or you're in the States here, there's so much animosity. We're head to head now about almost every aspect of culture. And that's going to permeate into corporations as well. They're going to be
unquestionably.
So what do they remember that we have forgotten, and how do we get it back?
We're only going to thrive in a sustainable way.
Right.
If we relearn that level of inclusivity.
Okay. So how do we do it?
So I have a three-step process when it comes to collaboration. I call it a transformational collaborative model.
Okay.
The first step is everyone has to become entirely aware of themselves. It's about awareness of self.
Okay.
So when we talk about awareness of self, it's what's our purpose? What's our personal purpose? What's our mindset? What do we want for each other? Are we being inclusive? Are we listening to each other? Mm. And so there's a whole piece of work that I think that every individual does on themselves before we can do anything else. And the more aware that we become of ourselves, then we can start talking about empathy and authenticity and courage. And when I talk about courage, I'm not talking about James Bond heroic courage. I'm talking about the true meaning of the word courage. I mean, the word courage actually derives from the French cœur, which means the heart. So it's about having heartfelt exchanges with our colleagues.
Okay.
And not making anyone right, not making anyone wrong. There's always different points of views.
Right.
And that's fine. And it's our diversity and how we include each other that we can find innovative solutions for the future and for any challenges that we've got. So once we have awareness of ourselves, we can foster more awareness of each other. Once we have more awareness of each other, then we can go to a place of group synergy where 1 and 1 equals 3, where we can go from purpose to performance, where we can actually be the brand of the organization that we work for. And, you know, having been in the corporate sector for, you know, worked in the corporate sector for more than 20 years now, every single company has the same values. The wording might be slightly different, but it's always about being the best. It's always about, you know, putting people first. It's always, they're all saying the same thing.
Right.
The words may change slightly, but it's always the same thing. And I from what I see is that it's often 9 times out of 10, it's top down.
Yeah.
So you have a communications department that decides what the, you know, the corporate mission is and the mission statement and the vision statement. And actually what we need to do, particularly as team builders, and if we take team bonding for an example, we need to be bottom up.
Right. So this is something that, would you recommend that just the commonplace worker, and when I say that it sounds horrible, but I mean the everyday workforce, can actually affect this kind of change? Or does the change itself have to come from leadership down?
It needs to come from both ways.
Okay.
It needs to come from everywhere in the organization.
Okay.
And that's why I would say, you know, responsibility is the key to this. And that's why I suggested, you know, that's good news and bad news, because it's all about us and it's all about us.
Yeah.
You know, and even the person, you know, who's lower down in an organization can still have that ripple effect throughout the organization. You can't force somebody top down to be something or to adhere to a way of thinking. You can't do that. And if we did, we wouldn't have a problem.
Right.
I mean, you know, if that was possible, team bonding probably wouldn't exist. And you know, thanks to old management styles not working, you know, we have lots of work. So it's, you know, it's great.
Is music one of the methods that you recommend for getting people to start looking at things differently?
I think music is incredibly powerful, unquestionably.
Okay. What is it that you do with music that starts getting into people, that you use to start making the change happen with a group?
Well, I think the foundation of music is rhythm. And so, you know, if we go back to the essence of music or the beginnings of music, actually the first musical instrument, if you search it up on Google, was probably a flute of some kind.
Okay.
But very soon after that, as a form of communication, everything was percussive. And so to use music, particularly collective music making, I mean, you know, there's some companies that would book a symphony orchestra and then bring in a conductor and then have varying different people from the audience come and conduct an orchestra. I've seen that been done before. And that's interesting, but it's just learning for the person who's actually conducting. Whereas collective music making is about everybody, and it's about everybody's learning. And it's how can we facilitate everybody's learning, because everyone is going to have a different takeaway. That's for sure. And so the first, you know, thing, as I said, if we consider music, it's about, for me, it's about rhythm. And as I said, rhythm comes back to feeling. So if you take a drum, drumming doesn't start with your hands. The djembe tradition, we always learn to say rhythms before we play them.
Oh, can you give me an example?
I haven't got my drum here actually, but if I were to say boom, ba, ba, da, boom, boom, you play boom, ba, ba, da, boom, boom. I mean,
right.
So it starts, that notion of using your voice before using your hands means it's coming from the inside to the outside.
Okay.
And actually, that's how we have to operate today is, you know, we're very used to operating kind of just externally, but that's not how that's not how music's made. Mm. And then if you bring in other melodic instruments, which I do with one of the conferences that I give, particularly with what I did with Oprah.
Yeah.
I brought a whole band on stage.
Nice.
And that's super interesting because Western musicians read musical scores, essentially.
Right.
And
right.
African musicians, or certainly West African musicians and the ones that I've worked with, not only do they not read music, they don't count.
Huh.
And so it's when you bring these two worlds together, that's where the magic occurs. And that's pure diversity in action.
Nice.
I mean, two completely different cultures, two completely different ways of doing something. And you bring those two together and it's just like, that's where the magic is.
Going back a little bit, you had mentioned how a lot of the leadership and the goals of organizations have always been that bottom line mentality. Does it sound like we need a complete cultural shift away from that? Or is there a way to continue holding on to that, but still bring this methodology of bringing everybody along with us?
So the bottom line is key.
Okay.
I mean, money makes the world go round to a certain degree, doesn't it?
I mean,
we have to eat, you know,
True.
We want our luxuries.
True. And if the company's not making money, you can't keep hiring people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's key. That's absolutely key.
Okay.
And yet, if we're going to get, I would say, particularly the younger generation to engage in an organization, mm-hmm. it has to be about more than just the bottom line.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Okay.
And so, I mean, just as an example of that, if I may, I run a program for a software company. It was last year. And I got to talk to the CEO, and the CEO said to me, I'm having trouble here. And I'm like, what's your biggest challenge? And he said, I can't get people back to the office. I can't recreate the company culture.
Right.
And I said to him, are you doing any CSR around your event? And he said, should I? And I said, well, I think there's an opportunity. So I said to him, when there was a company culture pre-pandemic, what were people doing to create that culture? And he said, well, actually, they were doing activities together, and particularly sport.
Mm.
I was like, okay, well, let's launch a challenge around the event in the organization. And so what we did was we launched a challenge where the 400-strong team, they had to walk, run, or bike 100,000 kilometers, so 60,000 miles,
Ooh.
In the space of 3 months. But
okay.
they had to do it at least in pairs, and they were
okay.
all tracked
okay.
using different software.
Right.
So that it wasn't, you know, one person swimming or running or whatever on their own. It had to be people from the organization. And if they succeeded with this challenge, the company agreed to send 20 bikes over to rural Africa for my not-for-profit.
Lovely.
So that kids could get to school without having to walk between 2 and 4 hours every single day under the hot African sun.
Nice.
And so what they did, they actually achieved the challenge in 5 weeks. And sure enough, the company, they sent out the 20 bikes to West Africa. And I took a film crew out, organized to take a film crew out. We filmed these orphans that were literally having to walk more than 4 hours a day
yeah.
to get to school and back. Receiving these bikes, the elation, the joy, the gratitude that these kids had. They'd never had anything like that in their lives before.
Wow.
They'd never had anything that was new in their lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we edited that film together. We took it back to the organization and the beginnings of the culture started to come back.
Nice.
And now they've launched another competition within the organization and they're sending out 15 people to work in the rural village to build a classroom alongside the African workers. And so I think what young people are looking for today is for business to be used as a force of good.
Yes. Agreed.
And to add to that, I mean, I've done work with Procter & Gamble. I know that they had an amazing initiative a number of years ago where they sent Pampers out to rural villages. Mm. But they didn't get used because in rural villages, they don't do things like that.
And then
what happens with the waste? And they weren't used to... And so I think if we're going to use business as a force for good, what we really need to do, and it comes back to empathy, is understanding what a true need is in any given place in the world. And it can be just as much in the United States or in Europe as in rural Africa or Asia. And then to use business as a force of good to do something. And that's how we're going to recreate culture. Because it is, once again, about bringing people together.
Doug Manuel, thank you so much. I think that just answers just about all my questions that I need to answer right there. Thank you, Doug. But before we do move on, I do want to ask you, tell us about Beats as One, your upcoming Netflix documentary.
So Beats as One is a documentary. It started off as a documentary about the timeless wisdom of rural Africa. And it's now become a film, a docudrama about the loneliness and isolation epidemic that we're all living. Yeah. And it tells my story of being lost, of not having any meaning in my life when I was, I don't know, 21, 22, 23, not long after my mum had died, and I was very, very lost. And I found community, and I found myself, and I found my path when I discovered the drum and I went to Africa and I learned what community really is. Right. And in parallel, it tells the story of this master drummer who I would say is almost a brother from another mother, who started in community in West Africa and who ended up in Brussels, lonely and isolated. And so it's the crossover of that story. And we very much hope that it's going to finish on Netflix, where it's with a number of production companies right now. And it's being pitched for Netflix at the moment.
So. Gotcha. Fantastic. I hope to see that soon. And my team out there, if you can, go on YouTube, go to Doug's website. What's your website, Doug, so people can actually find you out there?
My website is www.dougmanuel.com.
Fantastic. I'm telling you, look up his TED Talks, learn more about him. This guy he's really twigged onto something, and I think it's going to be big and important. But for now, just give him a big round of applause, everybody. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate you coming on and talking to us today. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time, Rich. I love talking to you.
And, thank you, my man.
And about a subject as well that's, I'm so passionate about, bringing people together, building teams.
Yes, sir. I hope you did enjoy yourself. I hope you continue to, because Doug, it's time for a speed round. Here's what we do. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and we're going to have 60 seconds. I know it's 60 seconds because that's how long the music that's going to be running runs. Now, during that 60 seconds, I'm going to ask you just a series of innocuous questions, just a way of getting to know you better. I do this as sort of a fun game to see how many of these questions you can actually answer in 60 seconds. So it's right off the top of your head, stream of consciousness, whatever you come up with, that's the answer we're going to go with. So you get to set the tone for season 5, my friend. You're going to be, as my first guest, you're going to be the one who sets the bar for everybody who follows you. You feeling up to it?
The pressure's on, Rich. The pressure's on.
All right.
Bring it on.
All right. As soon as you hear the music, I'm going to ask the first question. And away we go. What's your name?
Doug.
How many kids do you have?
One.
Do you have any pets?
No.
Okay. What do you think the greatest invention of all time is?
The djembe. The djembe drum. What else?
What is your favorite season?
Winter for skiing, summer for the beach.
Nice. What is your favorite time of the day?
Morning.
What is a food you can never bring yourself to eat?
Horse.
What is the sound you love the most?
Oh, djembe.
Name a famous person, either living or dead, you would love to have a meal with.
Famous person, living or dead, I'd love to have a meal with James Corden.
If you could pick a nickname for yourself, what would it be?
Djembe.
If you could go into space, who would you want to take with you?
Oh, Elon Musk. I want to go with Elon Musk and two djembes.
Fantastic. Doug, 12. 12 answers done in 60 seconds. Well done, my friend. That is a nice high bar for everybody to try to meet.
Is that above average, Rich? Is that
that's pretty much that's kind of just average, but still okay. Great answers. Great answers. You got a little tripped up when I asked you who you wanted to talk to.
Yeah, the famous person.
Yeah,
right?
There's always one question that everybody's got to actually pause and think about. Doug, thank you so much for coming, man. I really do appreciate it. I was looking forward to having you on, and you do not disappoint.
Rich, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, my team out there. There we go. We have wrapped up the first episode of Season 5 of Team Building Saves the World. If you've enjoyed this episode, whether you're new to the podcast or an old fan of the show, please be sure to share it with everyone that you know. Whether they're a coworker, friend, family member, it just helps us to share all of this vital information. You can find out all about us, including all past episodes, at teambonding.com/podcast. You can also find us wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You know where they are by now, and you know we're there, so please go ahead and listen. Oh, and don't forget to look for us on all the social medias at Team Bond Podcast. Leave us a message telling me whether you like the show, what you liked about the show, and if you have an idea for a future topic, I want to hear from you. So, before we say our farewells for this episode of Team Building Saves the World, please never forget, if you are within the sound of my voice, you're on my team now, and I am forever going to be on yours. So long, team. I'll see you next time.
Been said that you learn more about a person in an hour of play than in a year of conversation. So why not put your coworkers to play with the help of the team at Team Bonding? Team Bonding was founded over 20 years ago with one simple question. How can employees have a great time while fostering strong, authentic bonds between people who work together? Their catalog of innovative events includes scavenger hunts, Jeopardy, and much more. Each activity, whether live, virtual, or hybrid, maximizes the impact of team building with an accent on fun. Visit teambonding.com to schedule your event now. Team Bonding, when you want seriously fun results.